sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Negative rates backfiring. Unemployment continues to defy logic, now at 4.9%. Global markets clearly in mayhem and led down by the financials. And the big question is, will OPEC rumors help to stabilize oil prices? All this and much more on episode number 449 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, sports fans. Yep, it's Super Bowl day. Andrew Horowitz here. You're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me. We're going to make this nice, short, and sweet today because we have a lot to cover. But, of course, it is the day of the Super Bowl and the evening, so I need to get some things going, some cooking going, as I do usually for this day. Hopefully, you're having some friends and family over, or just some friends, and you're going to be watching a game. It looks like it's going to be a pretty good game, good matchup. We'll see how it plays out. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on around the market and some of the things that we really need to pay attention to. Clearly, it has been a disaster this year in terms of equity prices, not only in the United States, but around the world. And, you know, to a degree, some of this was probably building for some time, as we've been talking about, where the expansion of the earnings multiple for stocks has become rather stretched. No question that it's been a bit stretched. You know, the bulls will be out there trying to give you all sorts of rationale why we can continue to have these kind of numbers and see these kind of multiples like we saw in companies like Netflix or maybe even Amazon to a degree, and some of the technology and biotech names. And then even as they come in and we see prices come in and those multiples contract, they still kind of talk about how, well, you know, it's overdone at this point. Oftentimes, you see that on various programs, they'll bring on guests and they'll talk about how markets are overdone to the downside. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. When's the last time you heard that the markets were overdone to the upside? I mean, it's just not something you hear. So let's kind of get rid of the whole bullish tendencies of what we hear out there, even the bearish tendencies of what we hear out there, and try to be more neutral. It's so important to really think about markets, individual stocks, and the environment and the economy in a very neutral way where you don't get on one side or the other. I've been watching a couple of people that I follow on Twitter and some of their writings, and they're really defending this whole notion that, no, we're not going into recession. We're not in a recession. You know, every time some kind of item comes out that looks really good for the economy, whether it's auto sales or maybe even the amount of people traveling. Well, you know, the big question is, what recession? Oh, there's no recession. Come on, don't be stupid. You know what? Here's the thing. We may not put a label on the entire economy as being in recession, and those that are defending it so incredibly, you have to wonder why they're doing so, because we do have a recession or at least a contraction in some areas of the economy and some areas of earnings. There's no question that earnings have been slowing down, and whether or not we're in a recession or not really doesn't matter. I don't really care what you call it. I don't call it, if you say, well, it's just lack of growth, if you call it recession, whether you call it depression, whether you call it a pause, I don't care what you want to call it. The fact is, if you look at earnings on a broad base, they are slowing. We do know that revenue had been slowing. And if you want to maybe blame it on the fact that the dollar had been coming up in value, and when we do this currency adjusted or constant currency based reporting that knocks out some of the effects of currencies, and you want to satisfy yourself and say, well, it's because of the fact that currencies are hurting us that's a problem, that doesn't mean that that's a temporary situation. It may be the situation that was previous, where the dollar was so soft, was temporary. Again, it doesn't really matter, but don't try to rationalize. I'm not telling this necessarily to you, you know, that when you're listening to this right now. I'm really kind of speaking out to what we see in the marketplace in terms of all the people trying to rationalize and come up some kind of excuse why things shouldn't be the way they are, rather than just simply accepting this is what it is. Markets are down for a reason. You know, it's interesting. I was watching, I think it was it Larry Fink or Bill? It was somebody last week was talking about how I think it was Bill Miller, how the idea that markets are good predictors of outlook is really hogwash. You know, sometimes you hear that markets will predict the outlook of maybe earnings or economies or maybe, you know, something else that's under the surface, maybe 6 months out. As far as 6 months out, stocks will react. But no, that's not the case. Only the case when stocks are down and things are getting better will people say, yeah, well, it's reacting because things are getting better in the future. So again, it's one of these things where you have all these people that are trying their best to rationalize, and that's not really good for you or I. It's not. So let's take that and put it aside. Let's not even think about that. Let's just talk about facts. Let's talk about where we are. Let's get a little look at where we're going and go from there. So let's cover some of the last week's economics and earnings that we saw, some of the things that really, in my opinion, shook markets. There was obviously a really bad situation. Listen, we saw that for the week, the Dow was down 1.5%, stronger than the other indices. The NASDAQ down 5.5%. The S&P down 3%. Oil closed down 8.5%. Gold was up 5%. Something is changing. Now, maybe it's just a phenomenon that's just 1 week, 2 week, maybe a 3 week situation. But there's clearly a bid for safety assets. That's why utilities are the number one sector this year so far. And all of a sudden, we're seeing what we thought would be a big concern if it happened. The NASDAQ is breaking down. The big names are breaking down. The Facebooks, the LinkedIns, the Googles, the Amazon, Netflix, the Microsoft. I mean, you kind of go down the entire list. Apple. Look at Apple. Apple's terrible. Apple is down 20%+ from its high not too long ago. Big reversal on Google since its earnings. About 120 points from the high of where it priced out and where it printed on the earnings announcement. Amazon is in really tough looking shape. Facebook even fell. LinkedIn down 50%, or just about 50% on Friday after a really poor news item. Twitter getting obliterated. The list goes on and on. My point here is, though, it's very simple. Very, very simple. You need to watch the trend. You need to understand what's happening. And then also try to put all the puzzle pieces together to create the total scenario of what's happening. Now, again, not start with, oh, we're not in recession, therefore prices shouldn't be here, therefore I'm going to be buying or selling or whatever you're going to be doing with the particular names that you hold. Or maybe the market's got it wrong. Have you heard that? The market's got it wrong. Yeah, sometimes they do. Very temporarily. But longer term, it's not wrong. It's really what is the right answer. This is what is happening. So again, stop getting stuck in the whole concept of what people are saying, what you believe is the case to be, and go along with what is happening. Now, the unemployment rate ticked down below 5% last week, 4.9% as we added about 151,000 jobs in January. We saw that last month's really good number was brought down about 30,000 from where we thought it was last month in December. But what's interesting, I thought, was that we actually moved to a 4.9% unemployment rate with the labor participation rate ticking higher, meaning that the unemployment rate, if we were to continue the trend of labor participation rate going down and unemployment going down, and everybody was all, you know, concerned about how the statistical measure of unemployment was really way off and has been for some time because there's less people in the workforce. And when they calculate the unemployment rate, well, it's not as good as things are showing. However, we did also see this tick down in the unemployment rate down to sub 5%. And that is also on the fact that we saw stabilization, actually a move higher for the labor participation rate. Now that's actually a good sign for unemployment. What happened to markets? Why were markets so concerned about this? Essentially, what this said was that the Fed, who has been really pounding the table on continuing a rate hike process, if inflation was going to get to their 2% mark, and if, in fact, we saw that the unemployment situation was starting to heat up, or the employment situation, however you want to look at it, and that's happening, at least the part about the employment. We're still seeing that there is a bit of a tremendous lag due to some, as the Fed would say, transitory situations like oil and commodity prices in terms of the inflation rate. But at the end of the day, you are seeing that the employment rate is doing very, very well, which to a degree I think defies a little bit of logic. When you look at the manufacturing number that we saw last week, came in at 48.2, which is a little bit higher than expectations, but still well below the 50 mark, which says we're in a contraction. And on top of that, we saw that the ISM non-manufacturing or the service index went to 53.5. Still in expansion mode, but at the same time, it's down about 2.5 points for where it was the previous month. One of the big concerns I had was if we would see a significant move, which this was. Two and a half points move lower for the service index, I thought was very significant. Again, another thing that we saw during the week that was negative. And that being the case, you know, you have to look at the service industry as one of the major drivers of all sorts of revenue to various companies around the country in the U.S. One of the biggest things, about 75 or 80% of our overall economy is related to services. And as that is ticking down and we have the unemployment moving better, you got to wonder how long that's all going to stay like that. Something's got to give one way or the other. Either we're going to see that this is pretty much the last of the unemployment level staying where it is, and we're going to start seeing some increase in firings and the unemployment rate rising. We did see a little bit of a tick higher for the initial claims last week, but still nothing major. Consumer spending also has been flattening. We saw that personal income, while it rose 0.3%, in December, that, you know, you gotta look at that, because while income rose, savings reached a 3-year high of 5.5%, meaning that people aren't spending. Now, coming up next week on Friday, we'll have the January retail numbers that are going to be coming out, and this is something that's going to be a big concern, because we did see. I don't know if you saw this, but did you see the Kohl's blow up on Friday? Ralph Lauren blow up, Amazon getting crushed, many of the retail sectors doing terribly. As a matter of fact, consumer discretionary had its worst week, I think, this year so far last week. People aren't spending. Now, whether they're retrenching for some reason, it's not showing up in the consumer confidence numbers. We'll see the latest reading of that also on Friday coming up. University of Michigan's, their initial February consumer sentiment index is going to be coming out on Friday. And we'll go through all the different things in a moment, what are going to be coming throughout the week, because we have some big things that are happening this week that could definitely move markets, aside from the fact of, you know, the oil that's been moving markets, some of the earnings, et cetera. But we have some economic and news items that are going to be very important this week coming up. But so we have this very mixed bag, right? So we have stocks definitely selling off. We have consumer confidence that's been holding up, has been holding up. We have the manufacturing sector, which is doing poorly. We have services that started to move lower. And actually, let's think about that. Let me do a quick calculation here. If we have 48.2 and we have 53.5, right? So we have a total of, 4, 5, 1, 10. So we're still in an expand, right at, you know, just above. If you take the total of the non-manufacturing and the manufacturing and you add that up and average it, we're still in a general expansion on the total of the two, about 50 and a half. I'll move it to 50 and three quarters. So 50.85, that's your exact number. 50.85 is the actual reading. We could round that up to 50.9. So if we were to get a reading of the manufacturing and the non-manufacturing index in the U.S., we're at 50.9, which again is lower than it has been and the trend. And that in total will give us the massive amount or the core of our business and what we do in our country that leads to GDP eventually. It's definitely slowing down. Recession? Not yet. Are we going to recession? I don't care. I can tell you we are in an earnings recession. We are in a manufacturing recession. We are in a situation where factory orders are slipping, where inventories have been somewhat rising a bit, but now they're starting to pull back, where retail is seeing a significant amount of pullback by the consumer, maybe a retrenchment, maybe not. But the backdrop of all that is outside the U.S., things are pretty poor. And with the fact that we're seeing oil back at $30 again, down 8% for the week, that's a little bit above, but getting close to that level again with the front page of Barron's this week saying oil at $20. But that's good news, of course. You got to look at, of course, where the source is from. Why is that good news? Because the article goes on to say that, well, oil could fall as low as $20 a barrel in the first half of this year. Okay. But it's going to recover to about $55 by year end. Now, what do you have there? You have analyst expectations that Gene Epstein, the writer of this particular article, is talking about. So he's trying to put a little bit of sugarcoating on this whole thing because analysts who have been terribly wrong at their pricing on the long-term basis of not only oil, but on earnings and on the price for the S&P, which, by the way, side note, they've been bringing down their pricing expectations for the end of the year 2016 for the S&P dramatically recently. Not all of them yet. Still a bunch at the 2100 level. But if you look at the latest move on the expectations for earnings for the fourth quarter, remember we've talked about this. It was about 106. Now it's about 105. And we're about 120. Still for the end of 16, a 120 number. So looking outward, if in fact we do miraculously hit 105, for the full year 2015, we'd have to have about an 18% rise to get to the number for earnings expectations on the S&P 500 by the end of year 2016, about a year from now. Now, how is that going to happen? I have no idea. I will tell you that I've mentioned before that oil and gas-related companies, refiners, some of the material companies, are all still being priced as if they are going to have positive earnings throughout the end of 2015 into 2016. Now, that just doesn't make any sense. We know that, generally speaking, they're all coming out with horrible numbers, with losses, with down 70, 80, 90%. Of revenue declines, of earnings declines, and now we're starting to get to the point where you have the potential for bankruptcies. Now, Lynn Energy may be looking to file for bankruptcy. Stock was down about 56%, which was down a lot, but down 56% on Friday, which is following a major trend lower for that stock. LINE is one of the symbols you could look up for that. Now, where are we going with this? The fact of the matter is that however some of these analysts want to couch the whole idea that China is not an important feature and we only do a certain amount of trade there and how, again, the rose-colored glasses are on when we're looking at China and the effect we have on the rest of the world, something is not right. China is sinking very significantly. I don't know if ever they'll be called a quote-unquote hard landing because analysts just loathe to believe that that's ever possible. But I got to tell you something. If this is not a hard landing, I don't know what is. You have every single indicator on China slowing precipitously and their stock market essentially in turmoil. The only reason why things are being held up is the billions and hundreds of billions of dollars that have been pumped into the markets for liquidity purposes over the last several weeks into the Chinese New Year, which starts now. So you have the Chinese New Year, which is essentially going on right now. Markets will be closed there starting, I believe, tomorrow for a week or so, or maybe 10 days. in mainland China. And they had to pump so much money into the system because there's a mass exodus. It's basically a movement out of the currency, out of assets in China, anywhere else. I mean, just anywhere else. So this is having a really big impact on the rest of the world too, because China, the idea that China has been using also money and their foreign reserves to stabilize, or not even stabilize, to back their currency, because everybody else is selling it. Plus internally they're selling it, even though there's some capital controls that have been put on recently. The money is just, there's a flight. The money is leaving the country and they are trying to defend it every way possible. Now, once they come back from the Chinese New Year and they start doing their movement of markets again, and the government gets involved, I would wonder, and I really question, if they're going to be able to keep the currency up and if they're going to want to. They clearly wanted to do something to stabilize it in front of the Chinese New Year, which is a time when people pull money out to spend. And banks have a natural depletion of their assets. And I wonder if the government was really doing a tremendous job in holding up the yuan due to the fact that they wanted to make sure that there was enough money to go around, if you will, and there wasn't any kind of major bank run, because the money that was coming out already was going to cause some problems, some weakness in the banking sector further than what there was already. And if after we come back from the Chinese New Year, if there's going to be a major devaluation that happens with the currency, I think it's very probable. Now, what does that do for the rest of the world? If in fact China devalues their yuan, let's say they do it. Last time they did it about 2.5%, and things went haywire. But let's say they go and they do a devaluation of about 10%. There's some talk about anywhere from 25 to 30%. I mean, I've seen some discussion about a 50% devaluation is what's really needed right now. But let's say they do a 10% devaluation. That would throw a major, major monkey wrench into the world markets due to the fact that you would see that devaluation happen and all the cross currencies, particularly with the euro and the dollar, just go haywire. That would not have a good effect for markets. The dollar would come up in value against the yuan. You'd see the, the euro currency would move up as well. There would be a short squeeze on euro currency. There'll be a sell of the dollar. That would take the dollar down a little bit, but the euro would definitely move, and the yen would probably skyrocket in terms of strengthening. That would be a big problem. The yen strengthens and the euro strengthens and the dollar comes down. That's going to be a big problem for assets here. One of the big things was there was a carry trade. We've talked about this so many times. But this carry trade that has been going on, that basically is one that is sell the yen, sell the euro, buy the dollar, buy. That's going to turn, because that was also used to buy stocks in the U.S. A lot of sovereign wealth funds are going to have a big problem here because they have such big exposure. This is something years ago we talked about. I remember talking about this whole concern I had about sovereign wealth funds getting so actively involved in markets, in currencies, in commodities, that when the time comes that they start to pull out, and when we do see that retail has been pretty much sitting on the sidelines just in ETFs and mutual funds for years, not actively involved in stocks since we went from the old rules of trading, et cetera, and banks are now out of the whole game also generally, you know, because of the current rules in terms of the bank holding rules, that the potential for a significant market decline, which maybe we're seeing the start of right now, is really there. Now, when I say significant, you know, again, I hate to bring up, like, you know, depression and, you know, the great market crash of, you know, in the 30s and maybe even the 70s or maybe in 2008. That's not what I'm talking about. You know, whether we see it a 20% or a 30% decline, it's very painful. You know, right now from top to bottom, we're 10% on the S&P or so. But it feels like hell, right? You look at some of these stocks, we're seeing major, major problems. So stocks generally will react much more. Now, one of the biggest problems right now, and maybe why I'm more concerned at this moment than I have been in some time, I'd like to be proven wrong, to be honest with you, because, you know, nobody likes to see market declines that are, hurt people. But one of the big problems right now is if you haven't looked, you need to take a look at the banking sector. Now, particularly in Europe, have you seen what's going on with Deutsche Bank, Banco Santander, Credit Suisse? These banks and several of these names, not all of them, but if you go down the list, Royal Bank of Scotland, they're trading below the value of where they traded post-crisis. So right when the major financial markets blew up around the world back in 2008, 2009, if you look at the lows from then, these stocks are trading below. Now, you got to wonder, wait a minute. I thought the ECB had their backs. Mario Draghi has been like all over this, right? One of the big issues has been this negative rates that is totally, absolutely, and unquestionably, in my opinion, backfiring. These central bankers have no idea what they're doing when it comes to this. And it can be seen by the way the banks are trading. Now, we know the Kurata in Japan came out with negative rates a week ago or so. And that initially was greeted with a lot of excitement, but then it turned and it's becoming nasty. Banks are going to lose money with negative interest rates. That was not the intention of the ECB. The experiment that has really been done before in a few cases, in isolated cases, but on a grand scale that we're talking about now, this is really, really hurting banks. And as the core of the financial system, you don't want to do that. You don't want to mess with the banks, and especially mess with their profitability and mess with the potential of the long-term stability of the banks, because that creates a lot of chaos in the financial systems. That's one thing you don't want to mess with. But leave it to the ECB. They figured that the quantitative easing program they had hasn't been increasing inflation fast enough. And of course, Mario Draghi wants his place in history, which he may end up getting his place in history for the wrong reasons. Not as the guy who saved Europe, but the guy who absolutely trounced Europe. The guy who actually came in and with good intentions tried his best to follow along what the United States did and the Fed and the central bank did, and then failed miserably because he went too far. Because that setup in Europe is not the same here as the United States. Because you have so many different countries with so many different governments and so many different underlying reserves of the countries, etc. It's not the same. And it's not the same as just the states here in the United States and the United States. Not the same. It's not. They're different countries. Trying to put this entire process over the entire financial system of Europe, when you have all these different scenarios and all these strengths and weaknesses interdispersed inside all these different countries, is a major problem. And he went too far. And now the Bank of Japan has gone too far. They're trying to push and persuade banks to put money out on the street, and it's just backfiring on them because they don't want to do it. The risk is too great. And on top of that, they're being penalized. Now, while Japan did say something about how this negative rates will only affect new deposits and we're not going to allow it to hurt bank profits, which I don't understand how they do such a thing, but okay, let's go along with it. You could see how things are getting ugly. Why is the Japanese yen, even with negative rates, the best performing currency this year to date? Because there's a safety trade going on. There's a flight to safety. And oftentimes that leads to the yen. And at least the dollar too sometimes. But it's been leading to the yen because there's so many on the short side of the yen thinking that the Bank of Japan is going to continue infinitum with increasing their quantitative easing program and debasing the currency. But the fact remains, what happens, which maybe this is the wild card they didn't figure, what happens when everybody else is doing it? And on top of that, when the largest country in the world, in terms of the economy, is starting to slow, the dollar starts coming down. And all of a sudden, that trade gets reversed pretty hard. Anyway, I really do think that these negative rates, I got to get somebody to, I talked to Das about this, but I got to get someone else who really has a real good insight to come on the show and talk about this, because this negative rate implementation, I think, is a really, really dangerous situation for economies around the world. And, you know, it's going to show up in stocks. That's what's going to end up happening. Simple, plain, that's it. So while we may not be in a recession, like we said, maybe something else is going on that's going to cause a major problem for markets. It's already happening. So who cares what we call it? Who cares what we label it? Bear market, correction, rally, downtrend, recession, non-recession, manufacturing recession, earnings recession. I don't care. The fact is, something is happening, and we need to pay attention to this. Is it a good time to listen back to some of the episodes where we talked about hedging and how to do it? So, you know, and to look at maybe not being so absolute with your thought that this is a great stock, will come back one day, no matter what, I'm going to hold on to it. And then just, you know, get in a situation where your portfolio is getting crushed. One note I want to make right now, and then we'll talk about some other things. I got a bunch of tweets and emails last week, and I don't know what was the reason that all of a sudden, there must be, maybe it's because markets aren't so good and people are getting a little bit concerned, but there was some request for me to talk about how we manage money at Horowitz and Company and the different strategies. We have three unique strategies. We have Arrow, which is an algorithmic trading strategy, deals with trend, overbought, oversold, in, out, short of the markets. We have the TDI managed growth strategy. All this is available over on the Disciplined Investor. You can check these out. The TDI managed growth strategy. And we also have the Horowitz and Company global allocations, a little bit different, a little more traditional. You know, you find a level of risk that that's appropriate for you. And what we do is we put you in one of those. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about this, not today. We're going to talk about this in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to have an expanded discussion of this. I'll have Kevin Hoffman come on. We'll talk and we'll kind of really flush it out so you have a real good insight into what we're doing with that and to understand a bit more about how we manage money. But I just wanted to mention to you that all the people that asked, I will have that information for you, and we'll do a nice little piece and a little segment on that. All right, oil prices. Where are we going? We know that inventories are out of control. We know that the bills have been ridiculous. We know that there is a glut and a lack of demand. Okay, we know all that. We saw a couple of spikes over the last 2 weeks, each on the idea that OPEC and non-OPEC members are going to get together and they're going to do something to stabilize prices. Maybe. Well, over the weekend, there was some kind of meetings that went on. We'll see what happens when the markets open on Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern. That's when futures open for Earl, for good old oil and the S&P futures, etc. Currencies will kind of start playing around a little bit earlier. But basically, 6 p.m. in the evening is when things start happening. I would think that these rumors that are becoming more and more in frequency and it's shorter in time between each is going to start to get people a little bit spooked. I don't know if Saudi Arabia is going to really step up to the plate and do something, but these meetings with Venezuela, Argentina, and Saudi Arabia, et cetera, that are being talked about, so far, each time they have been coming on, we've seen 8%, 9% rally in oil, a lot of short squeezing going on, and then fade the next couple of days, like we just saw. So we'll see this, you know, maybe they have to do something about their timing. They've been coming out towards the middle, the end of the week. Now they came out on the weekend with this. So maybe they're going to get a nice start to the week and move oil. There is clear correlation between how markets are moving and how oil is moving. And one of the big reasons is that we're seeing that there's a real big concern about the credit worthiness of many of the bonds in the oil sector that are then hurting the banking sector because they hold, whether it's unsecured debt, revolvers, or maybe even some other debt. There's definitely exposure to the banks in the area of oil. Now, that's being downplayed also, but the fact of the matter is that, again, there is a... it's kind of like, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? That kind of thing that's going on. You know, when a butterfly flaps its wings in oil territory, we see a cyclone in the stock market territory. I mean, however you want to play this and discuss this, there is a correlation and there is a relationship. Absolutely. So we're going to watch to see this. I think it's personally, I think that we're getting to a point that we're getting closer to the bottom of oil. I'm not making it an absolute here, but we're getting closer to the bottom of oil. If, in fact, we do see that the hedges are going to start coming off for many of these oil producers and they're going to slow down because once the hedge comes off that they have, they're not going to be producing as much as they have been in the past. They just don't want to. They're not going to make money on the new price. If they get a hedge at 70, they could pump as much as they want and sell it at 70, essentially. But what happens when those all come off, all those hedges that they have? They're not going to want to be pumping as much. No, you know, less pumping means, well, then less builds. Less builds is going to be seen as a good sign of turning point for oil. Am I saying that it's a good time to buy oil? No. You know, use your own judgment for that. I mean, there'll be a time you'll see it. It'll be clear. And we start to see a reasonable base that breaks down and holds, but holds nicer at a higher high, higher lows. We're not exactly there yet. Close, but not there yet. We're also going to see, by the way, another reason why you may see some moves this week. We're going to see that towards the middle of the week, Wednesday and Thursday, Janet Yellen's going to be speaking before Congress, and that's going to usually be a time when you see some interesting moves here. We also have, let's see, let's go through some of the earnings that we have coming up. This week coming up on Monday, Yelp. I have no faith in that company, and that basic model seems to be shot to me. Tuesday, earnings from Akamai, Baidu, CVS Health, Coca-Cola. We see Panera Bread, Spirit Airlines, Walt Disney, Wendy's. Let's see. Now, on Wednesday, we're going to be seeing Expedia, Cisco, iRobot, kind of interesting company. Let's see, LoJack, I'm trying to go, Tesla. That will be interesting to watch. Twitter, Time Warner, Whole Foods, Zynga. Thursday, we're going to see earnings from Activision, Blizzard, Avon, Groupon, Molson Coors, Pandora, PepsiCo, TripAdvisor. And then we're going to have on Friday, University of Michigan's consumer sentiment index, which I mentioned, but also the January retail sales. So that's going to be important to watch. But I think the big thing also that you want to watch for is that on February 8th to 9th, there's going to be a biotech CEO conference. Now, there has been a tremendous amount of volatility within the whole biotech space. Take a look at symbols BIB, BIS, LABU, and LABD. BIB is a two times biotech bull. BIS is a bear. Then you got LABU, LABU, that's lab, LAB, up, or lab, down. That's how they do this. BIB is like a biotech buy, biotech short. BIB is the long, BIS is the short. LABU is the long, is LABU, that's a three time. That will have some massive, massive amount of volatility as biotechs move. But I got to tell you something. Some of these biotechs seem to be, they seem to be blown out a little bit harder than they should be. And it seems to me that what you're looking at here now is very similar to what's happening in some of the social media space, which, by the way, has gotten pretty rocked recently, where we did see that I think that LinkedIn really freaked people out. Social media stocks are down about 16% on average this month. If you look at the SOCL ETF, down 16% this month. But you had, of course, Twitter get whacked. Facebook's coming in. It had a nice run, Facebook. Then it came in a little bit Thursday and Friday. Google's not really social media, but you look at some of these names, you know, you have to find some that are better than others. Twitter obviously having major problems, needs a major revamp. Concern going on that maybe with this whole LinkedIn blow up where advertisers are finally slowing down in some of the areas and being much more selective and putting their money only in a few places, but the outlook for them has slowed, that maybe this is the time that social media is going to come back down to earth a little bit. We talked about this some time ago, that if, you know, the backdrop of the economy slows, companies need to pull back. Where are they going to start slowing their expend? It may be the social media advertising. Anyway, a couple of things I want to mention to you. Just going through my list of things here, making sure I don't forget anything. Ah, this is interesting. So, have you been watching two stocks I want to talk about? So, quickly, we're back to being short on Shake Shack. Earlier in the week, we shorted Shake Shack. There was some news in the area of Buffalo Wild Wings, unrelated. They got the Norvo virus. They came out with earnings. I thought their earnings were awful, by the way. The stock was up after the earnings. I don't know why it was up, except for the fact that maybe there was some shorts covering, finally getting out of the position. The conference call was a little bit more upbeat, but I got to tell you something. Their earnings and their outlook was terrible. Just absolutely terrible. GoPro is another one. GoPro's earnings were more than terrible. They were abysmal. This is something that if you've been listening to the show for a while, and hopefully you've been ringing a bell, I have talked about shorting GoPro for about a year and a half. Hopefully you got on that bandwagon. However, with the action after the earnings and the outlook, which I thought was shockingly horrible, the stock was pretty stable. Now, the stock is down about 80% or so, you know, on a one-year basis. 60%, it's down 60% less 3 months alone. Now, the earnings that came out, they missed on both revenue and on EPS. But more, I think more shocking was that they're guiding down about 60% of revenue and on earnings of what analysts had expected. And the stock was down about 20% after hours, came back, finished the day down about negative 9% or so. And I thought that was actually a pretty good thing. Now, again, I'm not a real big fan of the company, but, you know, certain times you get a little value going on. We entered a position in GoPro long after the day when the earnings came out. Now, fortunately, there was a new collaborative patent licensing agreement with Microsoft that was announced on Friday, which the stock was actually up 7%. Now the stock is actually at or just at the point before that earnings announcement came out, and I think that's interesting. Has the stock been totally oversold and overdone, at least for a trade? So we bought that for TDI, Managed Growth Strategy Portfolios, TDIMG, and we're up nicely on it right now. But, you know, people are like, what? I even tweeted this, by the way. If you haven't been following me, follow me at Andrew Horowitz. One word is my Twitter handle. Make sure to follow me because I'll kind of put those tidbits out there here and there. I'm not going to give you just a full range of the things that we're doing. Of course, that's for clients only. And again, you can find out my Twitter stuff and Facebook, all that stuff over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. So just hop on over there and check it out. But I thought it was really interesting how well GoPro, first of all, the sentiment couldn't be any worse on the stock. Just can't be. That's number one. Lots of short positions on it. Number two, any incremental benefit where maybe there's going to be a licensing arrangement or some other kind of collaborative effort with the company to work with another company, or maybe, who knows, somebody comes in and says, you know what, this is cheap enough, we're going to buy this thing and utilize it for something. You know, put it together and work it together into our portfolio of entertainment and try what GoPro was unable to do, was to monetize the whole entertainment side of where they have the movies. I'm not sure what they're going to actually do, but I got to tell you, from a sentiment standpoint, can't get worse. Okay, that's check one for possible look to buy on a short-term rebound. Number two, earnings. Couldn't get worse. Check two. Earnings outlook, definitely, unless they're going to go bankrupt, can't get worse either. Another check. And the fact is that the stock held and reversed after the earnings announcement. Forget about the whole Microsoft announcement. That was a kind of check three that, all right, you know what? Time to enter a bit of a small position here and see how this plays out. Obviously, you know, if we do break down below the levels of, you know, we'll call it 975 or so, that's when you have to start thinking, man, they couldn't hold, we're done. So right now, though, we entered a short in Shake Shack, giving a little teasers here, and a long for GoPro. Again, we may not hold that for a long period of time just to collect some nice profits on it and move on. But you know what? Again, when you see these sentiment situations happen, like we saw on Shake Shack, where sentiment was so great for so long, it's starting to finally break down. We'll see how that plays. A little bit thinly traded. Earnings are on March 5th, by the way, on that. And GoPro, where sentiment is so poor and stock actually held up pretty well in the face of all that, well, that's kind of a good thing, at least on the short term. So I mentioned it's going to be a short show or a short end show. We'll leave it at that. Hopefully you got some good information on what we had talked about. We have some great things coming up, and we'll do that discussion of the various strategies that we have and what's available to investors in the next couple of weeks. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged. We always have a lot of fun there. We have some new design of the website, which is kind of cool in terms of tracking our weekly stock picks that we put out there. If you haven't listened to DH Unplugged, do yourself a favor. It's a fun show, and more so more so not only fun, but a lot of information is really discussed. So anyway, thanks for joining me, and we'll see you next week. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Enjoy the rest of the week ahead. Bye-bye.
Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.